This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The COVID-19 Delta variant is ripping its way through the American South. Federal health officials have said this latest surge is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, as many counties throughout the nation report low and very low vaccination rates. If anyone needed a reminder, this would be it, that we're not done with this just because there is a vaccine available. So what does that mean for the hospitals and clinics who treat virus victims in Michigan and the public health officials trying to plan for fall and winter, and really all of us? Here with us to talk it through is Emily Martin, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Dr. Martin, welcome back to Stateside.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I should say, Michigan hasn't seen the same rumblings of a summer surge the same way that Arkansas has, or Los Angeles, which is going through some renewed public health restrictions right now. But Michigan did report hundreds of new cases of COVID-19 last week and more than a dozen COVID-related deaths. How do you feel like things are looking at this moment?
You know, in Michigan, you're right, we're not seeing pressure on the hospitals. We're not seeing big surges of cases, but we're also not seeing this kind of sustained maintenance at these lower and lower levels of transmission that I would have liked to see. You know, we're definitely seeing case numbers start to bump up a little bit. And it's particularly concerning because we know that testing isn't what it was a few months ago, 6 months ago, you know, so we're less likely to find out about cases when they appear. And so, you know, any sort of movement upward in the numbers is a bit concerning and something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. What parts of the state are of particular concern for you and other health experts as we think about Delta?
You know, with the state, it's always sort of difficult to predict where Delta is going to show up and when. But we worry always more about areas that have lower levels of vaccination. And it's not even necessarily a geographic parameter as it is groups of people. You know, as anytime you've got big groups of people gathering or interacting with each other with a really high unvaccination rate, then that's a scenario for if Delta gets into that network of people, you're going to have a lot of illness spreading really quickly within that subgroup.
Michigan proved a couple of months ago that the virus is unpredictable. Our state was the only state to see a major surge in the springtime when the B.1.1.7 variant was just running rampant. Do you think there's anything predictable about our unpredictability at this stage?
Well, you know, one theme that has come up in every surge that we've had is travel and movement feeds virus into the state and into the population. We saw that around B.1.1.7. We saw that in the early days of COVID. And, you know, Michigan has been a really popular travel destination this year. And so that kind of speaks to our need to be vigilant and watchful as we have people move in and out of the state, both visitors coming in that might be coming from areas that have a lot of Delta, or people from Michigan going to these states that are having really high transmission rates, picking up variants that they might bring back to Michigan. Now, obviously, that's nothing that we can prevent. It's going to continue to happen, but we need to continue to watch those patterns to try to see whether, you know, the Delta starts to emerge more. We have had smatterings of different variants in Michigan. And of course, we remember the big B.1.1.7 situation that we had in the spring. And so, you know, we know that they're around, but they don't seem to be a major player here now. But we do know we have to keep watching for it.
Yeah. How are you feeling about the way that the vaccines we have available are reacting to the Delta variant? Do you feel pretty confident that what we have right now will help us keep things more or less in hand if people get vaccinated?
Yeah, you know, the data that we've got available says that the vaccine does work against the Delta variant. And what we're seeing in hospitals around the country is that when you see hospitalized adults, the adults in the hospitals aren't vaccinated. So the Delta vaccine is performing very strongly in keeping people out of the hospital, even when they've got the Delta variant, and keeping them from having these mortalities that we saw earlier. Now, the challenge is that as you have more and more cases in a community, you're going to have some vaccinated people will get infected. Not as many as if they hadn't gotten the vaccine. We, you know, the vaccine does still seem to be reducing infections by 70, 80, 90%, but it still leaves, you know, 20% of those infections might still be occurring. And so the more we let transmission increase and increase in communities, the more that you're going to have these rare events where vaccinated people will get infected also. And so that's why we often talk about having a good, robust vaccination campaign, but then doing the other things that we need to do when we see spikes or clusters of illness to try to keep the overall numbers down.
Are epidemiologists worried about the coronavirus mutating beyond the scope of our vaccines coverage? Is that a topic that people are keeping an eye on right now, beyond Delta?
Yeah, I think around the world, we're watching that so, so closely. You know, I think we've shown and seen really clearly that this virus has the ability to change. And we don't really know what changes are going to happen until it happens and we see it spread. And so we're really carefully monitoring every change that the virus is making, not just in the U.S., but internationally, to kind of compare it to the current vaccines. And there are tests that you can do to see whether or not we're expecting the vaccines to cover whatever new things evolve. But the truth is, with viruses, the more that you let them infect person to person to person, the more they're going to change and the more we're going to have new surprises to contend with. And so our best bet of avoiding that change is getting transmission down, getting vaccination as common as possible, you know, before further changes happen.
What's a realistic timeline for a variant to be identified and for pharmaceutical companies to develop boosters and to get boosters to market? Is that a matter of months?
It is a matter of weeks to months. The interesting position we're in now, you know, we're used to, so, you know, we learned to think about this with the flu, because the flu changes every year and you have to change your vaccine every year. And the way we were making vaccines back when we did this with the flu, it took a year. Now, the fact that the mRNA platform has the ability to just swap new variants in and out of it if we need to, means that something could roll out very, very quickly compared to what we're used to. So that's the good news. And we're also really having a lot of advances in technology in terms of how quickly we're able to see new variants and characterize them. We're definitely in a position where we are going to be able to respond relatively quickly when things start to go that direction.
If you're just joining us today, I'm talking with Dr. Emily Martin. She's an associate professor of epidemiology at the U of M School of Public Health. Emily, there are some parts of the country, including LA County, last week, who started requiring everybody, including those who are vaccinated, to wear masks again as the virus spreads. Could you see Michigan back in that position?
You know, it's tough to do. There are some areas in Michigan where masks aren't popular, and it isn't the thing that is happening very often. You know, I actually moved around the state a little bit this weekend, and there are some cities where you see masks pretty commonly still, some cities where you don't. I do think that what we see is our national organizations in public health, the CDC and others, really wanting local communities and local groups to be making those decisions. However, you know, what you see happening in the LA County situation is that it's very difficult to require masks for one group of people who's not very easily defined. And so with that kind of muddiness of, you know, you walk into a room, everybody's unvaccinated, everybody's unmasked, is it because they're vaccinated or they're not? It becomes really operationally difficult for public health professionals, particularly if you have a situation where you've got rising rates like they do in LA County and a concern about protecting the vulnerable. So you can see local public health officials might want that tool still in their toolbox if things start to heat up a bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that conversation around either at the community level or at the specific organization level. You could see particular employers or particular schools wanting to go in that direction because it's easier than trying to figure out who's vaccinated and who's not and try to use that to drive your masking recommendations.
There are quite a number of unvaccinated people who have had deaths of people close to them who are aware of the stakes of the disease and who still have made their decision and might choose to in their eyes, tried to stay safe in other ways. Do you have any thoughts on how we can communicate with folks who aren't vaccinated yet, but who there's a chance of reaching?
Yeah, you know, I find, you know, one of the points that you mentioned is that the fact that the vaccine's relatively new. And I definitely understand the caution about that. But on the flip side, it strikes me like we've never had this huge amount of experience of vaccinating this many people all at one period of time, right? I mean, we've got hundreds of millions of people that we can learn from now. And so although it's relatively new in terms of chronology, the number of weeks it's been around, if you think about the number of people that have gotten the vaccine, it's actually very impressive. There's actually tons of data behind this vaccine compared to, you know, other products that would be on the market at this, you know, at this stage.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so there actually is, you know, we know a lot about the vaccine and we have a lot of data to back up that they're safe. You know, I'm interested to watch these misinformation campaigns and how people are struggling to deal with rumors, myths, misinformation that they're hearing out in the community. And because, you know, a lot of these forces are sort of bigger than what we're used to dealing with, the speed with which some of these messages that are frankly just factually incorrect take off. And the more we can all learn to talk to people about what we know and what's being supported instead of repeating misinformation and myths, I think that will do a lot to kind of bring that public health messaging forward.
You know, now that the mass vaccination clinics have closed down and we're down to some unvaccinated people who do have a primary care physician or some other health professional that they trust in their lives, there's been some conversation about what it would mean to just have COVID vaccines available in doctor's offices. Some do offer them. But we have heard in a couple of interviews that there are primary care docs who are reluctant to offer COVID-19 vaccines. I guess because of the fuss, there's extra paperwork to do. They have to have those conversations with their patients. In some places, they may be dealing with storage issues, depending on what kind of vaccine they wanted to try to offer. Is there, do you have any perspective on this, or is there anything that could be done to reduce the paperwork end of things?
Right. Well, these are, these are difficult vaccines to administer from the perspective of, like you mentioned, the storage conditions, the paperwork, the fact that they're packaged in larger batches. So you want to try, if you open a vial, you want to try to use up the vial in a day. And so some people feel pressure to try to vaccinate a whole group of people at once instead of just one person. You know, a lot of these settings that we're seeing this challenge is because they, you know, did not do a lot of vaccination perhaps prior as part of their regular practice. And because, they were partnering with pharmacies or other places that were doing a lot of routine vaccination. So you'd kind of refer your patient over to a pharmacy to do some of that work, which is totally a good strategy now as well. And so there's this tension there between what can you offer in your office and the time that it takes to do the vaccine counseling versus being able to refer somebody out and then not knowing whether or not they actually get the vaccine or not. You know, it's definitely a trade-off. You know, I think even before the pandemic, primary care offices were under a lot of stress in terms of trying to, you know, handle a really high workload of patients with not necessarily all of the resources that they needed. And so it's great if we can get family medicine, primary care doctors more involved because they've got that tight relationship. Then we've got to figure out how to resource them also.
There's something that we've noticed that just feels really concerning. There are some sentiments floating around in social media or on social circles among some folks who are vaccinated, reflecting that those who are unvaccinated or who get sick or who even die are somehow expendable due to the fact that they didn't get the shot. Along with a continued push to get more people vaccinated, I wonder if there's room for us to combat those sentiments and that apathy that can bleed into even more of a partisan divide. Have you observed any of this?
You know, I've heard some of those same messages just sort of in my own in my own watching social media and watching the various news podcasts, things like that. And to me, what I always want to say to that is, you know, I went into public health for a reason, because, you know, in public health, we prioritize taking care of everybody and trying to meet people where they're at. And I think that we could all continue, if we all continue to do that, to prioritize taking care of everybody, then that means, you know, if somebody, we've got people that are unvaccinated because they've chose not to. We've also got people who are unvaccinated because they don't have access. We also have people who, and access means a lot of different things. Maybe there's not a clinic open when you're off of work because you work a really, you know, off shift schedule. We've got some people that are unvaccinated because it's counterindicated for them. There are not many, but there are a few people in that category. There are also people who got vaccinated who aren't going to respond as well because of their immune system. And so it just speaks to this idea of viewing us all as a group together. We're still all in it together. We still have to take care of everybody. It's a whole population. And I would hate to see we have this kind of schism where we've got vaccinated people living in this other level without kind of taking population-based strategies into account.
Yeah. Is there anything else that strikes you about maybe how the planning for COVID and the coming seasons of COVID variants should change to reflect what's going on with people who haven't been vaccinated yet?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to probably be moving into a scenario where we've got continuous management of COVID, either from variants or from we've got pockets of people that are unvaccinated. And so you're going to have, you know, certain cities, counties, small areas kind of flare up, have an outbreak, and then die back down. And we've all going to be committed to watching this and continuing to work with management and being adaptive, kind of like we watch the weather to when a storm comes and goes. And right. That's going to be true, you know, for vaccinated people and for unvaccinated people. This is not going to really end for one group of people with a, you know, a moment in time where a bell rings and we don't have to think about COVID anymore. It's always going to be in the background. We're always going to be watching it. So I think if we sort of retool our thinking to this more mindful awareness of it being around and something that's always going to be managed to some degree, and in knowing that vaccination is the best way for us to individually manage it, but we're going to continually be looking for other strategies. That's sort of how we think about going into the future.
Emily Martin is an associate professor of epidemiology at the U of M School of Public Health. Emily, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow.